Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Northwest Passage. I'm KLCC News Director Rachel McDonald.
I'm Morning Edition host Annie Katz.
I'm news reporter Brian Bull.
And I'm reporter Chris Lehman.
So, Chris, the legislative session is getting pretty heated in Salem, and you're there at the Capitol. We are recording this on Thursday morning, so I want to make a disclaimer that a lot may change in the next few hours. But to start with, the Senate Republicans seem determined to prevent a vote on the cap and trade bill.
Yeah, they're clearly opposed to it, and certainly lawmakers are frequently opposed to legislation and vote no on legislation. But the Senate Republicans are using a tactic that apparently won't require them to vote no. They're simply leaving and won't show up at all. At least that's their publicly stated strategy. They've scattered to the four corners of the wind. They've, in some cases, left the state entirely by their own admission. This would prevent them from being rounded up by state troopers and brought back to the Capitol, which is something that is possible but rarely used under state law. And, you know, there are objections to this carbon emission regulation bill, House Bill 2020. They say it would hurt rural economies. Of course, there's a lot of questions about the bill, even among Democrats. It did pass the House earlier in the week on after a very lengthy floor debate. But now Senate Republicans are basically walking out. They are denying the Democrats a quorum. So the legislative math is you need at least 20 senators on the floor to conduct business. And Democrats have 18 members, so they need at least two Republicans to show up. So by not showing up, the Senate cannot do any business. They can't vote on anything. You may recall that earlier in this legislative session, the Senate Republicans did the same thing. They stayed away about a week over a tax and spending bill on education. It would tax businesses and spend the money on education. They stayed away until they got some concessions. Democrats agreed to kill two other bills in exchange for Republicans essentially coming back to vote no. Right now, though, the timeline is such that the legislative session has to end by June 30, according to the state constitution. And obviously, there's not a whole lot of time left. So if Republicans stay away, then a lot of bills might die, not just this cap and trade bill.
Chris, I was wondering, because I think the last walkout over the Student Success Act lasted about 4 or 5 days, you know, and then there were negotiations. So do you have any sense that there, you know, there is this time limit, but also do you have any sense what negotiations could even be about if they were to happen?
Sure. And Republicans were in negotiations with the governor much of the day yesterday. Of course, there's a lot of different moving parts. I mean, they have to negotiate with Democrats in the Senate. The governor would also have a say since she is the one to sign legislation or veto it as well. What they're basically saying, I mean, you know, they acknowledge, of course, that they're not going to defeat the bill on its merits, you know, on a vote on the floor. The bill has already been amended quite a few times over the past number of months. What they're saying at this point is, you know, they're saying, if nothing else, could you at least allow this bill to go to a vote of the people? There's a couple of ways to do that. You could have lawmakers basically refer it out to voters, you know, that it would automatically go to the ballot, or you could allow people to gather signatures to force a vote. It's called a referendum. Right now, there's something called an emergency clause on that bill, and that would prevent anyone from gathering signatures. So as recently as yesterday, Republicans were saying at least take the emergency clause off so that people could gather signatures and force a vote on it if that's what they desire to do.
Hmm. And the governor is also talking about possibly having a special session.
Right. The special session that she announced, I should say a possible special session, would be on July 2nd or perhaps starting July 2nd. So that would be a couple of days after the constitutional end of the regular legislative session. Now, what would happen is every single bill that had not passed during the regular legislative session would die. So you'd have to start all over again in the legislative process. So presumably they would only come back to pass the most necessary things. Obviously, that's subjective. But one of the necessary things would be a state budget. Now, the state budget appears in a variety of bills, so many agencies already have a new budget in place. Some of the biggest ones do not, so they might come back, and Republicans are saying they might agree to come back for the special session if it's just budget bills, for instance, if the Democrats agree not to do the cap and trade bill in the special session. So, you know, again, that's something that's still being talked about at this point.
So, Chris, this is not the only thing that happened this week. Can you catch us up on some of the what successfully did get achieved in the legislature?
Well, there's certainly a lot of moving parts right now. And, you know, there's definitely some high profile legislation moving ahead in Salem. But a lot of it is coming into question, not to go back to that Senate Republican walkout, but that is looming large. Just to give you an example, on Wednesday, the Oregon House passed a bill that would make some significant changes to the state's death penalty. It would not do away with the death penalty, but it would limit the ways in which it could be used or the types of cases it would apply to. This bill had actually passed the Senate earlier in the month, and now it's passed the House. You'd normally expect it to go to the governor, except the House made an amendment to the bill. They changed the bill. So even though it's passed both chambers, it now has to go back to the Senate for something called a concurrence vote. Well, you know, guess what? The Senate is not meeting currently. So, even stuff that has passed both chambers still might not go into law. There's been some movement on the budget committee level in terms of sending state agency budgets out. There's a scheduled vote on paid family leave and instituting a statewide paid family leave program. Again, the future of that is in question. Even if it passes the House, it would die if the Senate doesn't come back into action. So it's been a very busy week, but a lot of the work going on around the building this week may come to nothing if Senate Republicans don't come back.
Well, thanks, Chris. We're glad that you are paying attention to all this and that you understand how it all works.
I'm trying, Rachel.
Lots of moving parts.
Well, we're impressed. So, Ani, you have been hosting Morning Edition all week. Any other stories that stood out for you?
Well, so one other thing that is related to Salem that I have a personal connection to, because I am someone who has a terribly early morning schedule, so I do require sometimes an afternoon nap. And the one thing, not my children, that keeps me from having those naps are leaf blowers. Gas-powered leaf blowers would be banned in Oregon starting in 2023 under a bill that got a hearing earlier this week at the Capitol. Supporters of the ban said the pollution and noise generated by the machines makes them unsuitable for use. I'm sure a lot of you know exactly what noise I'm talking about. The bill is, however, already dead because the committee hearing The bill is already dead because the committee hearing it can't advance legislation at this point in the session. They're just too far along. So maybe next year, fingers crossed, for those of us who have terrible schedules and need to nap in the afternoon.
I understand too, Ani, that it was basically raised to just put the issue out there and just kind of gauge if there's interest and support for it for a future session.
And it sounds like there is. So we had some testimony from Tyler Cohen talking about how disruptive they are.
It was the noise and the smell. So I would try to cover my ears and put my nose and mouth under my shirt at the same time.
It is one of those noises, I have to say, that really, even if you close the windows, you can still hear those things. So I'm a big fan of a ban. I'm going to lose my journalistic integrity for a second and
Ani
say,
reveals her biases.
So many.
We have a church on the other side of our backyard, and they clean up the parking lot before Sunday services, but sometimes they do it late at night. There's a leaf blower, you know, after 9 o'clock at night. I have similar
that would
feelings.
Make me crazy. Oh my god.
I think Ani just needs a sign in her yard. Morning Edition host.
Yeah.
Please
yeah.
be quiet.
I think, get off my lawn.
post your hours.
Not a bad idea. So here in Eugene, last week, the city council, we covered this on KLCC, the Eugene City Council passed an ordinance to fund community safety services with a payroll tax. And now volunteers are gathering signatures to get the tax referred to voters instead. Nonprofit The nonprofit group Eugene Springfield Solidarity Network has some issues with the payroll tax, but the number one reason they want to reverse the council's decision is simple. They actually just want Eugenians to be able to vote on it. They say it's not fair that the council decided this on their own and that those of us that live here should be able to vote on that issue. So they need 7,000 signatures. Stay tuned.
Again, you are listening to the Northwest Passage on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald with Ani Katz, Brian Bull, and Chris Lehman. And Brian, you've been busy this week working on some features, but what else do you want to share with us?
Well, a couple items that I got on newscast this week. One is that I talked to the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, who shared a troubling statistic with me. Apparently, out of all the veterans statewide who are signing up for VA benefits, women trail men by a pretty staggering figure. The director told me that only about 19% of women veterans are signed up for VA benefits, compared to about half for men. So this is services available to them for health care, post-traumatic stress disorder counseling, burials, and memorials. So she seems to feel that it's just a matter of more outreach and education, and women veterans basically getting in touch with their county VA representative and getting those benefits. So that was kind of a follow-up to an earlier story I did about a special portrait exhibit that had been on display at Salem. The other item that I had to do with a little site visit, if you will, to Veneta. We're gearing up for the 50th annual Oregon Country Fair. The golden anniversary is near. But when I got there, I was there to, of all things, deliver a fire extinguisher to KLCC's booth.
Wow.
That thing got heavy after the first quarter mile. But as I got there, there was an awful lot of slash and a lot of banged up paneling that was piled up in various corners, and I thought it was a little intriguing. And this is all part of that still lingering aftermath of the late February storms that dumped more than 18 inches in 2 days across Lane County, causing more than $17 million in damages. So I got to the booth, dropped off the fire extinguisher, and there were the workmen on their lunch break. And I talked to KLCC's marketing director, Gail Chisholm, who described exactly what happened to KLCC's booth and what was being done to it.
So here's our beautiful booth, built in 2011, and held up beautifully well through many winters of flooding and storms. And this year, a huge branch from that tree right there just came right down the middle of our booth, took out this whole section. Fortunately, the Wow Hall side remained intact. The KLCC broadcast side, also fondly known as the hot tub because of its shape, stayed intact. But this part where KLCC does the meet and greet just collapsed.
Now, it's worth noting, too, that there's always work to be done at the Oregon Country Fair site, because being on the Long Tom watershed, there's always flooding. Some people say that when you get there early enough, you can actually take a rowboat or canoe your way down the various corridors and trails that we come to know more so by walking it during July. But yeah, after the spring thaw and the heavy rains, it's actually possible to boat through the fairgrounds. So, but no, there was a lot more paneling. Basically, it was just, as we've seen already, a lot of collapsing trees due to the heavy snowfall, and one apparently went swoosh right through the middle of our meet and greet counter. Yeah, when I got there, there were chainsaws. They were cutting through new roof beams, and it looks really nice and set up, so we'll be ready to go. But yeah, it was just one of many stands that were affected by falling branches, and that's still, again, part of that winter storm aftermath.
Well, and we will be, KLCC will be broadcasting some of the Oregon Country Fair that's coming up the second weekend of July. You can get more information at klcc.org. Now, as we do with every episode, we will close out the Northwest Passage with a reflection on something that's been sticking with you from the news this week. Shall we start with you, Ani? You're smiling.
Sure, yeah. This week, school is out. So I think a lot of us have gone through some milestones with our kiddos. My little one finished preschool this week, so I now have two elementary school age kids, which feels like such a small thing, but it is a big deal. So I've actually been kind of not paying as much attention as I usually do to the news. But on Monday, which is a day that I do not host Morning Edition, I got to speak at the commencement ceremony for the Department of International Studies at the University of Oregon. It was a real honor to be there. And in a time when the news is troubling, to say the least, it was really inspiring to sit with a group of people who'd spent the last 4 years of their college years studying the world and wanting to find ways to make it better. And so spending a couple hours with them on Monday was the inspiration that I needed to keep showing up for work and smiling when I turn my mic on.
A little spiritual booster shot. Congratulations.
I needed it.
Yeah,
it was
congratulations
good.
On being the speaker at the graduation.
Fun. Thank you. Thanks. I was a graduate of the program, so I got to kind of revisit, relive some of my experiences there, which was good to remember, and then also look and see that kids are still coming out with the same, you know, positive outlook on life. So it's good to see that.
Keep that going.
I know. Seriously, we need it.
How about you, Chris?
Well, something that stood out to me as somebody who's working in the state capitol currently is that the building is under some renovation work right now. If you haven't been here this year, they're doing some seismic retrofitting. They're making some entrances more accessible to people with mobility impairments. They're taking the opportunity to do some work on heating and cooling systems as well. And once the legislative session is over, and presumably the possible special session, as we talked about, is over, the construction folks are planning to essentially shut down the building's air conditioning system for about 3 weeks in July. And you can imagine that is going Whoa. To give lawmakers a wow. powerful incentive to not drag things on around here. I can say, having worked in the building after hours, when they turn the cooling off, sometimes it can get stuffy pretty quickly down here in the Capitol basement, and I'd imagine other parts of the building. So the building will still be open for most of that time. There may be some areas of the building that are still being cooled at various points, but it will be a much less hospitable place for about 3 weeks in July this year. So use caution, but come on down to the Capitol anyway, I guess.
I wonder if there's any legislation of grade shorts and t-shirts and sandals that they can wear during that period.
Yeah. with like a short sleeve suit jacket or something.
There you go.
Maybe we should send a gift of deodorant from KLCC to the state capitol.
They will be powerful in another sense after a few weeks of sweating in those suits.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't imagine.
That's not good.
How about you, Brian? What's your takeaway this week?
Something that took my fancy on the national level, scaling down to the artsy level, has to do with the West Hollywood City Council having voted this week to have President Donald Trump's Walk of Fame star removed. Mm-hmm. Basically, the council members who are in support of it are citing his conduct and disturbing treatment, quote unquote, of women and other actions that do not share the, quote, shared values of the city of West Hollywood, the state, and country, the resolution reads. And so they are making the case that Donald Trump, who got the star back in 2007 for his reality TV show work, should not be allowed on the Walk of Fame anymore. So this is up, though, largely to the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce. And they have said in the past that it would never remove stars because of a potential backlash. So the city council and the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce are going to probably have a little bit of back and forth about this, because the city council counters that the Walk of Fame is still the property of the city of Los Angeles, and that therefore it has the responsibility for the condition and maintenance of the Walk of Fame. Donald Trump's star, especially since winning the election, has been subjected to vandalizing quite a bit in that time. Somebody took a jackhammer to it. Somebody put a golden toilet on top of it. It's been defaced with stickers. protesting his presidency, and someone even actually built a miniature wall around it once. And so there is a clamor from the president's critics that the star needs to go on a number of levels. Other people have pushed back, saying it's a little hypocritical. They point out that other notorious people, people who've been charged with offenses, including Bill Cosby and Kevin Spacey, have been allowed to keep their stars. Why shouldn't Donald Trump? Watch where you step.
Well, I've been listening to an NPR podcast called White Lies that looks into the murder of a Boston minister who went down to Selma, Alabama to help with fighting for civil rights in 1965. He was killed, and three men were tried and acquitted in the case at the time. And it's been a cold case ever since. This pair of reporters from Alabama, Chip Brantley and Andrew Beck Grace, have been doing a four-year investigation of the case, and their podcast, White Lies, is worth a listen. Just this week, it came out that they found a fourth man who admitted to being part of this group of men who attacked Reeb and a couple other ministers on the streets of Selma in 1965, which ended in James Reeb's death. So this man by the name of William Portwood, in an exclusive interview with NPR, confirmed his participation in the assault. The quote is, "All I did was kick one of them." He actually passed away 2 weeks after this confirmation that NPR confirmed his involvement. So just a really powerful podcast if you get a chance to take a listen to it. And also a testament to the power of investigative reporting. So that's my takeaway this week.
That's a good takeaway. Mm-hmm. You should donate online at klcc.org to support investigative reporting.
Well, thanks everyone for joining us for the Northwest Passage this week. I'm Rachel McDonald.
I'm Ani Katz.
I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Chris Lehman.